At Mount Carmel, we care for every part of you, from simple checkups to complex surgeries and everything in between. With a team of primary and specialty care physicians, specialized nurses, and expert staff who not only help you get better, but help you stay well. Here, care is compassionate, personal, trusted. We provide care without limits so you can live that way too. Mount Carmel, more care for all of you.
News Talk Sunday.
We are hopefully coming out of the back end, but it's been a very bumpy, wet, and at times actually quite alarming, drastically so, winter, which a lot of people didn't think would be quite this bad. So joining me here in studio to talk about climate change, weather patterns, and also the infrastructure that might at least give us a better fighting chance to offset some of the damage in future years is Liam Coyle, who's an EU Climate Pact Ambassador, and Dr. Amy Byrne, who's an Assistant Professor in Civil, Structural and Environmental Engineering at Trinity College. Folks, you're both very welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Liam, let's just talk about the last few weeks. A lot of people will link this up with climate change. Some people will say, yes, I get the link. That's almost, unless you're a very extreme denialist, which there's not many around anymore, that link is made and it's very much concrete. But people will say it's the adaptation piece that may be missing, the resilience, etc. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Emmett. And from the storms we've been seeing recently, like Storm Chandra and indeed last year with Storm Eowyn, it's unequivocal now that climate change is changing, how we respond and the effects it has in Ireland and across the world. So it's increasing the intensity and frequency of the weather Ireland experiences. Ireland has always had storms. That's not new. But I think it's new in terms of how often they arrive, how intense they are, and how much disruption they cause. Warmer air holds more moisture, and so that leads to heavier rainfall in shorter and longer bursts. And so the warmer seas add energy to the Atlantic systems. And so that results in stronger storms that are more frequent and less time to recover in between.
I think the public, you see, are bamboozled because on one hand, as you say, there was a lot of rain this winter, but the previous winter it was very stormy but drier. So it's quite hard for the public to get a handle on how is this going to sort of manifest itself, isn't it?
Yeah, so public attitudes are definitely shifting because people are experiencing this firsthand. So what does this mean for each person?
Me, my road.
Exactly, yeah. It means flooded roads. It means repeated power outages, flooded homes, as we've seen in some of the rural and coastal communities, disrupted travel, pressure on insurance premiums, and indeed some homes and
uninsurable
can't even get insurance. So this has moved the climate conversation away from the abstract into everyday challenges.
And Liam, do you think we have an issue where a lot of the conversation is about decarbonisation, which is clearly important, but you know, that work has to go on as well. But also, as you said, the resilience part, they're kind of two connected but slightly different conversations.
Exactly. So recent storms have exposed the mismatch between our weather that we're experiencing now and the infrastructure. Storms like Chandra act as stress tests for infrastructure. They reveal where systems come under strain, not because they were badly built in the first place, but because they were built for a different climate. So we see this across Ireland, drainage systems being overwhelmed by intense rainfall, rural roads washing out, electricity grids and networks exposed to prolonged high winds, and indeed coastal communities, and most of us have seen Enniscorthy flooding that happened there, repeated flooding. So the important point here is nothing has suddenly failed per se. It's that the assumptions those systems were built on are no longer valid or hold.
Yeah, and also one of the peculiarities of all of this, maybe it's just me, maybe I like defining these peculiarities, but we were told that yes, certain houses are on floodplains and they were built years ago at a different time, but some of the people who were flooded were in houses that were built 2 or 3 years ago, which presumably was based on some data that takes current climatic conditions into account. So that to me is very illogical. I struggle with that part.
I think in terms of climate change, it's certainly accelerating in its impact in Ireland. And I think in terms of how we build our homes, how we plan our drainage systems, how we optimize our electricity grid. We need to be designing and building that for what will be coming down the track, not what we have right now. So looking out to 2040, 2050 scenarios and making sure that the infrastructure that we build today, the blocks that we lay today, actually plan for that. So it goes back to the point of every euro spent now building for that future that it look like we'll have will save many euros down the line.
Okay. Liam, I'll hold your thoughts for a moment. I'll bring in our second guest, who's Dr. Amy Byrne. Everyone wants to talk to engineers about this. We have a real life engineer here in studio beside us. Amy, you're in the whole area of structural and environmental engineering. You'd probably be less used to us if you were electronic engineering, so you're in the right area. But maybe that'll come into it too. So our flood defences, you probably hear a lot of commentary around what we want. Obviously, there's coastal, there's rivers. The feature this winter was a lot of rivers breaking their banks and flooding the accompanying area. There's lots of engineering solutions, some expensive, some are temporary, some deal with a certain level. So where should we put our money, or what are we missing?
Well,
And how long have you got, says Amy?
Well, I suppose the way that you plan for a climate change adaptation is really to do with the type of flooding that you're getting. And what we tend to have is fluvial, which is when our rivers break their banks or our canals break their banks. We have pluvial, which is rain-based, and then we have coastal. And in Ireland, we have a lot of pluvial, if you hadn't noticed, and pluvial can create the fluvial issues. So if we look at cities, so you mentioned earlier about homes getting flooded that don't look like they're on a floodplain, they don't look like they're near rivers. And the real issue there is to do with sustainable urban drainage. So we have, as mentioned by Liam, we've built our cities around rivers and around coasts, and we've put concrete everywhere and asphalt everywhere, and we've put in these impervious roofs. And that's all leading to the water going into the drains or towards the drains and the low spots as fast as possible. And that's how we used to purposely design our drainage systems. But now we're looking at it in a different way. And what we need to do is try and increase the capacity of the local area to contain the water.
But can we not also have like places to siphon it off, pools potentially, where it's held for a while?
Oh, yeah.
Our barriers, like the Thames barrier, that hold it for a period of time.
Yeah.
Is that enough?
Yeah, completely. And what we tend to say is the best solutions are a combination of green solutions and hard solutions, hard engineering solutions. But the amount of hard engineering solutions that you need is greatly reduced if you lean heavily on the green solutions. So in sustainable urban drainage, we kind of do both. So there was a town called Augustenberg in Malmo in Sweden. And that kind of built up over the 50s. And that was absolutely wrought with flooding constantly. And the whole area went into disrepair. And they went about an eco-regeneration back in the 90s, where they put in a load of green roofs that were very mossy, very moss-based, and that reduced about 50% of the rate of flow off those kind of rooftops. And they also put in those hard solutions, so those open storm drains, and then they led them into these 10 different ponds that were dotted around the area.
Yeah, that's a pond, yeah. Okay.
Exactly, and they were designed to be kind of low and mainly empty for a lot of the time, but they were able to take that capacity then when it arrived.
Because I was sitting here listening to all these stories about the weather, and I was thinking, well, at least the reservoirs will be full, right? They will fill up. And then I was told, oh no, they can only fill up to a certain amount as well.
Exactly.
So it's like we have lots of water, but we don't have any demand for anyone to take it.
Yeah.
But so we'd be sitting here in the summer saying we're short on drinking water when the reservoirs run down. Guarantee you. I bet with you.
Yeah, very true. And, you know, that is part of climate change as well. So in the summer, we are also heading for more heat waves, and increasing those green spaces, increasing trees and canopy cover will both protect us from the rain falling and the rate at which it reaches the soil, but it will also create those cooler cities for
us. But if I'm a politician, right, I'm hearing the two things you're talking about, and I'm hearing one of them is the moss-based roofs and all that, I'm thinking, well, that's a lot of people. Some people mightn't like it. Whereas if I just build a huge barrier, it's done and you're done, right? I mean, I can see why the appeal is for the harder solutions.
Yeah, politically. But they tend not to be welcomed in the local communities. So the best solutions, and what happened in Augustenburg and what's happening across Copenhagen as well, is that you're working with communities to design solutions that they are more willing to accept and prefer. So
you're looking for that local democracy to...
Yeah, and it's more than just us creating a solution, designing something and putting it out. It's more creating with the local people.
But isn't, this sounds a glib comment, but isn't the problem that a lot of our infrastructure and our concrete and asphalt it's there. It's already laid.
It is.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying you can't take it up, but I mean, it's people have property rights. People, I own that path. I own that. So isn't that the blockage to that kind of solution?
It's one blockage, but we could give grants to redesign your garden, to take away that paving, to make it more sustainable, have more rock-based systems, have trees that will allow the water to, their roots will allow the water to reach a deeper level of soil for a longer and better containment of the moisture. You know, that could be offered. Local councils could work on introducing sustainable urban drainage in areas like retrofitting.
And what about solutions like raising the river banks and trying to get the river water out to the sea quicker and more securely and get it out of here? Like, so in other words, that earlier in the flow, it doesn't come up onto local residents and you kind of shunt it out with higher channels and so on.
Yeah, so that is a common approach. And again, that was probably the only approach that we used to go to.
Okay.
But so it's kind of deepening them, widening them, and that makes the flow go faster. So unless you're doing that all the way out to the end of the river, the mouth of the river where it leaves, you're going to cause problems downstream because you're pacing the flow.
Yes.
So what we need to do in rivers and what we are doing in rivers is we're looking further upstream and we're trying to prevent the water from the local landscape from going into the rivers in the first place. And that would be things like introducing these kind of small dikes, small let's say tree trunk based dams on streams, trying to block the flow from our peatlands into the River Liffey, for example. So there's lots that we can do up there. And there are also examples of where projects have been underway, like just outside Leuven in Belgium.
You're making me nervous with all these case studies from overseas. I'm going, why can't we have any of this stuff? It's all like Germany, Holland. You know?
So the Santry River Basin, they are doing a lot of work in this area, and you can look at the developing plans on that. So they are looking at ways of encouraging the capacity around the river where they can.
So would it make sense to just, all that nice stuff you're talking about, but also barrier up like the Dodder, barrier up the Shore, the North, all these ones, and sort of get in with that more, dare I say, silver bullet solution?
Like, yeah, but would it look very nice? Probably not. These massive walls, there'd be safety issues, there'd be the price of housing. You know, these are, you know, high price areas, coastal views, all of that. You know, sustainability isn't just about fixing your house from getting
these are
wet,
not,
you know?
These are not huge rivers by global standards, right? I mean, they're not enormous, right? No. I mean, you know, you go to the Nile or you go to wherever, like these are not huge rivers. So it is frustrating that we don't seem to really get it right.
Yeah, well, it's doing a bit of both. So it's doing the green solutions, working with nature as much as we can, because you get those co-benefits of biodiversity. We get co-benefits of carbon capture and storage, and also having a nice social environment that people actually like. And then you can reduce the height of those walls.
I can just see the amount of our listeners saying, you mean I have to rip up my driveway now? I can just see the reaction. But you have the logic of it in terms of planning and soakage, I suppose, drainage behind you. Liam, I suppose the one good side of all of this winter weather we had during January and February is that the issue of climate change, you know, young people, other people who are active and campaigning in this area, it's no longer theoretical. So I suppose that's a benefit, isn't it?
100%. And really,
because there was a denialist, particularly with Trump going into the White House and all, there was a sort of a rise in denialism. And, you know, until the bad weather came in, that group were sort of on the front foot for a period.
Certainly, climate change is unequivocally, you know, human influenced by the actions that we take on this planet. And I think generally that's accepted by most. Certainly the science points that way. And I think younger people are seeing it and engaging with it more. From the work I've been doing, there is some pockets of climate anxiety. You know, those common questions, are we too late? How can I, one person, actually affect this? But it's the community.
And there's a spirited debate between people who are campaigning saying, we don't want to be talking about adaptation too much because sometimes that can be code for, well, just let carbon get out of control and just adapt to it. So there's always that tension there, isn't
there? There's an adaptation and mitigation piece, and they go hand in hand. And so I think Ireland needs to be very much balanced. You know, what's at stake here is whether homes flood, the power stays on, your farm can operate, your business can operate and open. Okay. So there's real stakes at play.
Okay, fascinating conversation. You both come from very different perspectives, but I think hopefully there was unity in the middle. Liam Coyle, who is an EU Climate Pact Ambassador, thank you very much for coming in. And also Dr. Amy Byrne, who's an Assistant Professor in Civil, Structural and Environmental Engineering at Trinity College.
News Talk Sunday.